This is Cindy Gomez-Shemp with 88.1 FM, KPPPLP, Fargo-Moorhead, coming to you with another important update from the Sacred Stone Camp at Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. Greg Greycloud, a Lakota man who last year was forcibly removed by Elizabeth Warren from the U.S. Senate for singing an honor song for which he was later also arrested, is a well-respected water protector.
Sergeant-at-Arms will restore order. Order in the gallery.
On Wednesday, September 28th, Greg Greycloud posted a video stating that he found out there was a warrant out for his arrest on misdemeanor trespass charges. He stated he was on his way to turn himself in, along with his friend Aldo Sewani, who would be there to bail him out of jail. They were going to be meeting with legal counsel at the jail. Here's the statement made later that evening after Greg was arrested and held without bond from Aldo Sewani, the Director of Education and Training at the First Nations Women's Alliance and co-founder of Wika Agli, an alliance of Lakota men to reclaim their responsibilities as providers for the Lakota Nation's women and children by resuming their roles as traditional leaders. Greg Greycloud is also co-founder of Wika Agli and brother to Melissa P. Brady, formerly Melissa Merrick. Let's listen.
Hello, relatives. This is Aldo Sewane. Got some rather sad news to report. Brother Greg, we went to the courthouse to have him turn himself in. We were advised that there was a warrant for his arrest for misdemeanor trespassing that normally had associated with it of $150. We were advised that we would go in, pay the bond, and that he would be released. We got to the courthouse, the jail. Our attorney that advised us asked for a copy of the warrant. The officer said he hadn't had time. She had told him that, you know, she had asked several hours ago, and he said, well, there has been other priority cases and that he will get to it. As we were sitting there, the jailer came out with the another officer, who then placed Greg in handcuffs and then went and advised us that his warrant had no bond. At which point our counsel immediately said, this is ridiculous, misdemeanor trespassing, should carry a $150 bond, what's the deal with this? We reached out to the state's attorney, who said there is no bond set for this. Out of 100 cases, Greg's case is one of two where a bond has not been set. The other one was Cody Hall. He's being unfairly targeted. He's being profiled. It's not right. So brother's going to be in there until about 1:30 tomorrow. And I'm really mad. I'm really mad. So, you know, prayers and strength for everyone who's in there. And, you know, somehow, some way, you know, we got to continue to keep letting the world know that there's some huge injustices that are happening here in North Dakota. They don't follow the letter of the law. It was hard to hear our counsel talking to the state's attorney saying, how can we follow the rules when you keep changing them? Mr. Greycloud came in voluntarily in a nonviolent manner to resolve a confusion, actually, conflict. And this is what you do with that opportunity. And that's the reality of it, you know. We preach nonviolence. We work for nonviolence. We look to, you know, educate men in walking in that walk of nonviolence. And you know, we're doing our best to be the best of who we are, you know. And it's sad. It's sad when all we're doing is just trying to protect our relatives' future, to protect the relatives of Standing Rock, to sit with them, to pray with them, to be with them, to be with our relatives across Indian country that are facing these injustices each and every day. It's just mind-blowing. Going from a really promising situation to one that caught us completely off guard and shows just how ugly this government is. I mean, earlier today, some relatives were out there protecting the land, protecting the water, protecting the people, and they were greeted with shotguns, helicopters, tear gas, riot gear. I saw one of the nephews earlier tonight. He was at the action today, and he was just sitting there shaking still because an officer drew a shotgun and cocked it, pointed it at him. He's just a young boy doing what in his heart he knows is right. And, these are the people that are supposed to be protecting us, looking after our best interests. It's a sad day in America, you know. It's been a sad day each and every day since this whole thing started to see how corrupt our government is. To go by that checkpoint every night, to see all the relatives getting arrested, to see how presidential policies aren't being followed, and how they don't really care about our sovereignty. So together I know we're going to overcome this and we're going to beat this because we're strong. Regardless of what they do and what games they play, we're going to make it work. We're going to make it happen. So stay positive, stay strong, stay united, stay nonviolent, stay prayerful. Reach out to your representatives in Congress and the Senate. Let them know what's happening. Call the state's attorney here in North Dakota. Raise a stink about what's going on. You know, the squeaky wheel gets greased, right? That's what they say. So let's just keep on keeping on, keeping our heads up, and keep moving forward. And we'll see this pipeline stopped, and hopefully a renewed sense of awareness of our sovereignty as Native people. So I love each and every one of you. I know brother, he's holding strong. He's tough. And, at the end of the day, we're all going to be all right. So good night, everybody. Just want to give you that update. Take care.
Here is a statement by Melissa P. Brady, sister to Greg Greycloud and former director of Spirit Lake Victims Assistance. She is currently working at Elbow Woods Memorial Health Center. You may recall Melissa Brady, formerly Merrick, from hearing about an incident with Congressman Kevin Cramer back in 2013, when during a meeting regarding violence against women, the congressman said that he would, quote, wring the tribal council's neck and slam them against the wall, close quote, that he believed the Violence Against Women Act would be overturned by the Supreme Court, and that tribal governments and tribal courts were dysfunctional, making it difficult for him to believe that a non-Native man could get a fair trial on the reservation. As her brother Greg languishes in a Morton County jail off the reservation, Melissa ponders the fairness of the treatment of Indians by law enforcement and courts in North Dakota. Let's listen.
This evening I'm filled with a lot of emotions. I'm disheartened and disgusted and shocked and hurt by the actions of people within my state, a state that I was always proud to be from. I was always like, North Dakota, had low crime rates. North Dakota, it was such a great place to grow up. And I still live here, and I raise my children here. And what's happening to our water protectors, to our indigenous peoples, to people in general who are just trying to protect our water and protect what is sacred to us, our land, our ancestors that are buried, our ceremonial grounds, our ceremonial way of life, and that to be criminalized to protect our way of life is so wrong. I've been supporting from a distance up until this point. I've been somewhat of a Facebook warrior in this action against Dakota Access Pipeline. I don't stand for it. I stand with Standing Rock. I'm all for, protecting all that is sacred. Our land, our water, our women, our children. And this evening I'm so upset that my brother, Great Great Cloud, is sitting in jail with no bond. No bond, which normally should be a $150 bond. But no bond. And the only other person for that charge to be held with no bond was Cody Hall. You cannot tell me they are not being targeted. You cannot tell me they are not being profiled. You cannot tell me this is not corrupt. And where is Heidi Heitkamp? Where is John Hoven? Where is Kevin Kramer? Where's Dalrymple? Where is the Indian Affairs Commission? Where are all these people who are supposed to protect and uphold the law and make sure that our state is safe, is fair, equitable? I remember I had a conversation with Congressman Kevin Kramer about bringing a brown face into a court off the reservation. And will I get a fair trial? Will I have equal rights? And he downgraded our tribal courts and our tribal governments. And here we sit. My brother is being held with no bond. I had to calm down and think about what I wanted to do, how I wanted to be a part of things moving forward. And I've always taught my children that if we follow the rules, that if we fix the systems, if we become a part of it and fix it, things are going to be fair. Things will work if we follow this system. And North Dakota has made me a liar because it doesn't work like that. It's not happening that way. I've always tried to build good relationships with other agencies, with state agencies, with federal agencies, with, people of other religions, races, whatever, what have you. I've just always believed in working with people and that it was up to us to make it work. But how can I sit there and speak those same things? And I know it's not everybody. I know it's not. But how can I have those feelings and speak with that conviction when we have such injustices happening in our own home, just a few hours away? I don't know. I just can't do it anymore. My faith needs to be restored back into our systems, back into humanity. And without being ineffective and getting so upset that I'm people don't want to listen to me, I guess I want to ask all of our Native people, our Indigenous people, people who understand the injustice, you need to get out and you need to vote. We can't sit back. The government's ready to shut down. My gosh. How can we sit back? And whether you like this person or that candidate, or vote sensibly. Vote for somebody who's not going to tear people down, for somebody who's not going to listen and who only is coming in with a personal agenda. I've seen it in all the years. I used to love politics. I used to love being a part of campaigns and seeing the whole political system work. And lately I'm disgusted. I'm disgusted. It's up to us to vote people who are going to listen to us, who are going to respect us, who understand we only have one earth. Without water, we are nothing. Water is life. You can't drink oil. We have to get out and vote. We have to protect our Mother Earth. Our water, Miniwichoni, Unchimaka. We have to protect and save what's left of our earth for my children, for my grandchildren, for your children, for your grandchildren. At the rate we're going, there's not going to be anything left. And that's not fair to them. Please get out and vote.
And here's Aldo Sewanyi again with an update on the status of the arrest of Greg Greycloud.
Yeah, relatives out here at the front of the courthouse. Relatives are being released from jail. All of our water protectors are coming out. It's a beautiful thing. Update on Greg. So with Greg's case, we were notified as we were waiting for people to come in to speak with the judge that Greg's charges were dismissed. They said that his paperwork is in process and he'll be released. We don't have the reason for the dismissal, and it hasn't gone through yet, so we're still waiting. But we assume it's because these charges were fraudulent and trumped up by the state. Something that we hadn't spoken about openly was that Greg and I and about 80 of our relatives were at a family reunion on Rosebud. And when the incident supposedly occurred, we're very cautious about what actions we participate in because of the work that we do in the domestic violence field. And because we believe that, you know, through prayer, these things are going to be resolved, you know. I think by coming together and staying united, these things are going to be resolved. So keep the prayers going, keep the support going. This isn't over yet, and we're not going to take this lying down. You know, this officer fabricated charges against our relative here, our brother. And those things need to be addressed. They need to be addressed properly, litigiously, pragmatically. So this isn't the end. It's just the beginning. Our relatives here are happy. They're singing. They're smudging. They're shaking off that energy from the night before. And hopefully we'll be joined out, my brother, here pretty soon. I'll keep you posted. As soon as he gets here, you know, we'll get him on a live feed to talk to everyone and share his experience and what happened. I urge you to all keep following what's happening down at the camp, what's happening here in North Dakota. Keep an eye on the racism. Keep an eye on the bias. Keep an eye on these officers supposed to be doing the public good but aren't. We got to hold these politicians, these corrupt systems in check. We got to hold them accountable for these gross neglect of our rights and their use of power. It's not appropriate, and we can't stand for it. So keep on keeping on, keep on staying focused, keep putting tobacco down, prayers up. Keep focused on the cause. You know, we're standing united. We're standing here with Standing Rock. We're standing here with all of our brothers and sisters across Indian country that are fighting these injustices. And together, if we stay focused in that prayer, we stay focused on what we're doing, we're going to win. We're going to win. So I'm going to go see if Craig's out. Talk to you soon.
Here is a post from Linda Black Elk about media bias. I want to be clear. The amazing people of the Red Warrior Camp have been conducting a series of nonviolent direct actions along the route of the Dakota Access Pipeline. They're putting their lives on the line for us. Every time I see an article from media in North Dakota, it contains complete fallacies bordering on fairy tales in which North Dakota plays the big bad wolf dressed up as everyone's grandmother. North Dakota is the racist prostitute of the oil companies, the 1940s-style Mississippi of the North. So when you read things like, quote, the Morton County Sheriff says that knives and at least one gun were present, close quote, do not gloss over the part that says, quote, police were not on the scene, but according to Dakota Access Security, close quote, why don't they ever say things like, according to numerous water protectors, no weapons were present, and the entire action was peaceful. One more thing. Does wearing a bandana over your face to protect yourself from retaliation on the part of Morton County, the state of North Dakota, and Dakota Access Energy Transfer Partners make you look like a thug? No. And if you want to judge these folks for protecting themselves and their families simply because they're wearing a scarf over their face, then why don't you put your uncovered face on the front line and stop judging the people who are protecting Mother Earth for future generations? End of rant. Have a nice day.
There's a media black girl everywhere. Live and direct, come and correct. We are never powerless, and you know this. Tonight we extend our condolences to those who've lost their children. It's a sickness, mental illness, military mindsets and its servants. It's a fact, and you know that. Psychological warfare have us down. Life and death come and correct. We are never powerless, and you know this. Live and direct, come and correct. We are never powerless, and you know this. We are broadcasting.
Now, let's listen to an interview with Sarah Marielle Gaup-Baeske and Inger Biret Gaup of the Sami Indigenous People of the North, who traveled here from Norway to stand in support with the people at Standing Rock.
Hi, my name is Sarah Marielle Gaup-Baeske. This is my sister Inger Bir, and we're from the Sami people, the natives of Northern Europe, and we're here in North Dakota to support our sisters and brothers in their struggles and their protection of the water. And we have a lot of similar struggles back home. And we want to share a song with you, and it's called Tavas, meaning to the north, because we came all the way from the north.
Tavas yo vime teuan olan
from again?
From Sápmi.
That's what we call our land. So our people live now in four countries. The Norwegians and Swedish and Finnish people made their lands up on our land and split us into these three countries and Russia.
Thank you for coming.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
The Agua Caliente Band of Coahuila Indians announced Tuesday, September 27th, that they would be donating $250,000 to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's legal fund for their fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline. Quote, "The concern about proper consultation is a long-standing issue that impacts every Indian tribe in the country," read the Agua Caliente Tribe's announcement. "We support the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's efforts to ensure the United States Army Corps of Engineers or any other agency or department of the United States strictly adheres to the Federal Environmental Review and tribal consultation requirements prior to authorizing any projects that may damage the environment or any sites that are of historic, religious, and cultural significance to any Indian tribe. We are calling on the administration not only to follow the clear requirements of the law in this case and rescind the permits and require a full environmental impact statement, but also to do what is morally right in protecting these lands that are sacred to the Standing Rock Sioux," said Tribal Chairman Jeff Grubby. "Like the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and the hundreds of tribes across the United States, we are stewards of the land, and we must remember to be vigilant to protect our ancestral lands and all of the resources therein for the many generations to come." The Agua Caliente Band of Coahuila Indians encourages other tribes and organizations to also get involved by donating and providing political support in this effort, which highlights the need for thorough government-to-government consultations related to federal decisions made on all projects that incorporate tribal input in a meaningful way. To donate directly to Standing Rock, go to www.tinyurl.com/StandingRK. I'm here with Barry Nelson, who was the former director of the Head Start, early Head Start program in southeastern North Dakota. He is also on the North Dakota Human Rights Commission board. Is that correct, Barry? Did I get that right?
I'm there now. I'm their organizer.
Oh, okay. He is the organizer with the North Dakota Human Rights Commission. Thank you for agreeing to do this interview with me today. I wanted to talk to you about a meeting that I heard that you went to. I saw that you posted about having been at some hearings about the funding cuts for the state. And I heard also from one of the reporters, a freelance journalist named Chris Hagen that works for the High Plains Reader, that this was a really terrible state. He posted that he'd just gotten back from the meeting where people from across the state, legislators and private citizens, were very upset about the $13 million a month in state funds and $51 million in annual federal funds that were gone. He said people were losing their jobs. A mother of an autistic child committed suicide in northwestern North Dakota because she could no longer look after her child. There are people that are suffering with mental issues that are being sent to jail in handcuffs instead of hospitals, and the list goes on. I was really shocked to hear this, but I know that you were there, and I wanted to ask you what it was that you saw, and could you comment about your experience there?
It was pretty, I would say it's very similar to what you just reported from Mr. Hagen. I went there just because I wanted to learn. I you hear little bits and pieces here about the impact of the shortfall in the state government budget, and that it's having, you know, that we're all going to have to share with the belt tightening that comes along with that, which I suspected all along was a bunch of hogwash anyway, but I thought it would be good to learn something more from a personal basis, and this is what I received, that hearing the stories from advocates on the ground that are working with families with special needs children or children who are on the autism spectrum, families themselves, parents who were brave enough, and here's another just tragic aside, that the organizer talked about lots of parents who would who were wishing to be able to tell their story, but they were afraid of retribution if they were to be come forward and be honest. So whether or not that is accurate or not, the fact that that kind of fear exists amongst people who have children in need is an incredible commentary on itself. But what I heard then was both, I think what began was just the recognition that there is been cuts in funding.
And Barry, if you don't mind me just putting this in there, one of the things that Chris Hagan, the reporter I alluded to before, had stated that all of these monies are being cut to the mentally ill and mentally challenged because of the supplement of the 23% tax reduction for oil companies in Western North Dakota.
Exactly. But that was an interesting progression, because in a way it was at first just being presented that this is the impact of funding cuts that are occurring to our families. And it was at the very end of the meeting where Representative Mary Schneider said, I need to stand up and tell you that there is a cause and effect here. And that's when it really was. No, she laid it out very clearly that at the end of the 2015 session, when it was already clear that there was going to be some funding shortfalls coming up, that the supermajority in the legislature snuck through, basically. They didn't even follow their own rules and procedures, because she talked about how bills have to be introduced by a certain date and they have to go through this process. This is a bill that was slipped through in the last hours of the session, which then, as you said, provided a reduction, 23% oil extraction tax to oil companies and a corporate tax decrease to corporations, 80%, which are out of state. And so she made the point that a decision was made, a priority was set, that even though there might be shortfalls, that they still felt they needed to slip this by the North Dakota population of these funding cuts, which they had a chance at the special session this summer to reconsider those, and they chose not to do that as well, but continued to proceed only with the cuts that are inordinately high, because, as you mentioned, it's not just saying there's a 4% or 8% or 10% cut in state funding, but then there's that corresponding federal match, as you mentioned, which amounts to $51 million a year. So it's a huge hit, and it's a hit on children and families that can least afford it.
Yeah, it sounds as if there's a lot of people that were there to testify about how this has impacted people in the state. Can you share some of those stories, or at least some of the ones that were the most poignant?
Well, I think that the two that stood out to me, and again, this was two mothers who spoke about their own story. The one that was the most heartbreaking was the individual who talked about she has an 18-year-old son who is on the autism spectrum. I believe I was an observer, and I'm not a reporter, but that she talked about the son. They had brought him in for treatment, and the provider had said, "Well, give him sedatives and bring him home." And she was like, "Well, that doesn't sound like a very thorough kind of a treatment, but it's what we have." And so they did, and it worked for a while. And then he did have an episode where he reacted to basically lack of treatment, and basically she said took a golf club to every window in the house. And she said, I had 16 police cars surrounding the house, and the only way they said they could provide any relief to us as a family is we would have to charge our son with vandalism, and then he would be taken away in handcuffs. And she said, I would not do this to my son. I will not do this to my son. And so, to me, and the fact that she was able to, I mean, she, for the most part, held it together as she's telling this story that, of course, is ongoing. It doesn't appear she still has any kind of long-term help for her child, you know, 18-year-old child. But the fact is, you know, just illustrating the idea that this is the only recourse that many families are facing. And she said, I am somebody who knows the resources in the state. I I shudder to think of families who are not connected, that don't have support around them to help them, you know, what they are experiencing. This is just one story. I heard metaphors being used because they said that really this has been brought before the legislature for many sessions, and for the first time they received hope in 2013 that some money was being given toward treatment of particularly children on the autism spectrum. And she said, we were digging ourselves out of a hole, and now we've been pushed back down into the hole, and we're even further down in the hole. And you know, that just kind of clutches at your vision of this. And the other piece, I think, that is a very important piece of information is that North Dakota is one of five states where insurance companies are not required to cover treatment for many of the services that families need for their children.
Wow.
So even if you are a family with working families with full insurance coverage, your insurance plan can say, no, we don't cover that.
That's terrible. I did not know that.
It's a horrible scenario. I cannot think of a worse scenario for anybody, any person, and when you particularly know that there are children's lives involved. And as you said, they talked about a woman, and this is life and death.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a mother who could not handle the stress of not being able to provide for a child anymore.
And she took her own life.
Her own life. Yeah. As they said, we lost one of our mothers this past week.
And I have to ask you, because we're doing this show, we're talking about this on a show about updating about the news that's happening out at Standing Rock. Is this problem that we're facing, this shortfall, can it be considered another casualty of the oil boom?
I suppose you could. I suppose a person could make that connection. I think it's a crisis of leadership, as I see it, because you know, it took the boom and some additional monies for the state to even consider adding these resources to a list of things that were for children. I mean, it appears that we didn't have these services before the boom. Now they began, you know, very slowly considering and started putting things in place, and now because of the bust cycle, or however you want to characterize it, it's been yanked back again. But I think there is also, I think it's more just the crisis of leadership, the misplaced priorities that they would rather, I mean, it was so stark yesterday that a vast majority of our legislators would rather make sure that our out-of-state corporations and oil companies whose only interest in North Dakota is a profit motive, that their needs need to be taken care of.
Yes, but corporations are people too,
on
right?
On the back of our children.
They're treating the corporations like they're people too.
Yeah.
And they've put these priorities. But you also mentioned that this was kind of snuck by the people of North Dakota. It rings very similar to me with the lack of consultation or meaningful consultation that the people in Standing Rock are complaining about. It seems as if this was kind of hidden from the folks in North Dakota.
Exactly, exactly. I think that time and time again, and again, maybe I was struck yesterday that finally something was laid out so starkly in me that I couldn't avoid the correlation. I mean, I have to go along thinking like, yeah, I know we're having these horrible cuts, and yeah, I know the legislature did this really bad thing last session, but I didn't connect the dots till yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid that's where the general public is. But I think that there is a history here, that the idea that when these kinds of things, reducing taxes on oil, when put before people would reject it. They would say, we don't want this. We want that to be kept in place. So, you know, it's almost like with that knowledge, the leadership in the North Dakota legislature decided, okay, we just won't confer with people. We will not allow to have hearings and a chance for people who might be concerned about this to show up. I mean, it happened literally within the last hours of the legislative session.
Oh. Well, it sounds very, very shady, and I think that people need to connect those dots. So I really appreciate that you would help us understand what happened, and I really want, I know you're not a reporter, but I really wanted a firsthand account of what you heard and how you felt about it. Thank you very much for talking to us, Barry.
You bet. You bet.
Take care.
Thanks, Cindy.
65-year-old American Indian Movement co-chair member Don Cooney, a.k.a. Cooney Dog, was among those who, like Clyde Belcourt, were at Wounded Knee, where natives led a 71-day standoff on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. Cooney Dog has been at the Ocheti Sakoan camp for over 40 days and is the head of security at camp. He has recently set up a GoFundMe to help fund him and his crew as they provide security for the camp during winter. You can support the GoFundMe by going to www.gofundme.com/aimgrassroots-ion.
This is Lila June here, encouraging you to join the International Days of Prayer and Action with Standing Rock against the Dakota Access Pipeline and other issues affecting us locally. The battle is far from over in Standing Rock, and they need international and national support to help them see this struggle through to the end. So this October 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th, 4 days for each of the four sacred directions. Let us join together and create a great cacophony of mighty voices, prayers, and actions so that we can shake the very foundations of a paradigm that enables and defends the destruction of our Mother Earth. If there ever was a time for the world to come together in prayer and in peace and in impactful action, perhaps now would be the time. We stand on the brink of irreversible climate change and the destruction of the source of all life everywhere, which is our water. Our generation and every generation has an opportunity in this moment to make our descendants proud by standing up for what we care for and for what we truly love. Here are four ways that you can make a tangible difference. Number one, close your accounts with the domestic banks that are financing this pipeline. That would be Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and Citibank. We all have an opportunity to vote with our dollar to either empower that which destroys life or disempower that which destroys life. So let us use our dollar to vote for future generations. Number two, lock down the major headquarters of these banks in your area. We need courage and bravery of our people in our country to stage prayerful and peaceful nonviolent civil disobedience, to dramatize this issue, and to let the world know we are not afraid to lovingly yet firmly challenge a system that legalizes the destruction of Mother Earth and illegalizes her defense. Number three, participate in the gas strike and the gas boycott for some or all of these days, especially Phillips 66, which is a major stakeholder in this pipeline. We are going to have to learn how to live without fossil fuels soon, and so we might as well start practicing now. Number four, perhaps the most important way that you can assist in this prayer is to organize a ceremony, a pilgrimage, or some kind of public prayerful demonstration. It is prayer that ignited this movement, and it is prayer that will see it through to the end. What better way to celebrate Indigenous Peoples Day, formerly known as Columbus Day, than to rise up together as one human family and show the world we're not afraid to lay down our bodies, lay down our bank accounts, lay down our way of life, and lay down our resources for the protection of future generations. No matter where we are from, or what religion we practice, or what our race is, or what social class we find ourselves in, this issue ultimately affects us all. Because this pipeline is not just a pipeline. This pipeline is a symbol that represents a way of life that prioritizes short-term gain over long-term sustainability. A way of life and a paradigm that prioritizes the bottom line over life on Earth. We all have a beating heart, and we all have breathing lungs, and we are all living beings. And this is how we can ensure that we give this experience this sacred experience to future generations. Whether you're a pipeline worker or a water defender or a Wall Street banker or a mother who lives downstream of the Missouri River, I am one with you, and I will do my very best to walk in a sacred manner to ensure the protection of not only my children, but of your children and of everybody's children. So please help us reach our goal this October 8th through 11th of 5,000 actions, prayers, and demonstrations in support of Standing Rock to bring light to this issue, stop the pipeline, and also address issues that affect us locally. Thank you so much for your time. We love you very much, and we hope to see you there.
A post from Linda Black Elk about donations for Standing Rock Sioux Nation. There are a lot of bad people taking advantage of our efforts and making money by claiming that they are buying donations or making a trip out here. So be careful. I've heard a lot of people criticize LaDonna Brave Bull Allard. I refuse to hear criticism of someone I know to be honorable and who always puts her people first. She's been accused of not sharing donations. This is completely and utterly false. I've personally seen thousands of dollars in supplies spread all through the camp. There is not $800,000 in someone's account, although that is approximately the amount that has been donated to all camps since April. The majority of that fundraising has been spent on supplies and is being spent to build an entire environmentally sustainable city from the ground up, literally. You see, your donations are not just going to supply a temporary encampment. They're going to help rebuild lives. We're getting permanent traditional housing in the forms of teepees with liners. We're also setting up gurs, yurts, Ojibwe longhouses, earth lodges, and some campers are even looking at cob and straw bale structures. We want to be completely wind and solar operated and off the grid by 2018. We're trying desperately to build green, large-scale water purification systems. We're trying to get back to the land in a good way. That takes time and people. And in today's society, it takes money. We can't do it alone, and all people are welcome on this journey. I also have concerns about separate camps and criticisms of separate GoFundMe pages for different bands of the Lakota and Dakota. For some reason, this makes outsiders think that we are not united. That is also false. For one, it takes the pressure off of LaDonna having to make sure funding is equally disseminated to every single person. It also means those camps are practicing a traditional method of taking care of their ospaye, their band, while still contributing to the greater oyate, the tribe. Listed below are sites I personally trust and know to be reliable. These will give the most impact for your donation dollars. If you have any questions, ask. Don't spread lies, misinformation, and rumors. If you want to send supplies directly, you can mail them to Sacred Stone Camp, P.O. Box 1011, Fort Yates, North Dakota, 58538, or Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, Attention Donations, P.O. Box D, Building 1, North Standing Rock Avenue, Fort Yates, North Dakota, 58538. To send supplies to the kids at the Defenders of the Water School, please purchase items on the Amazon wish list. Please do not send more school supplies. You can donate directly to the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe at their PayPal at standingrock.org/standing-rock-sioux-tribe-dakota. There's also a Sacred Stone Camp Amazon wish list. You can find all the information about these at the sacredstonecamp.org. There is a GoFundMe there for them. There's also a PayPal you can send money to at sacredstonecamp@gmail.com. Or you can contribute to their legal fund by going to sacredstonecamp.org. Red Warrior Camp also receives direct funding. You can donate directly to their legal fund to get representation for those who've been arrested and or physically attacked by Dakota Access. Find the Red Warrior Camp on Facebook. Oglala also has a camp and direct funding at www.gofundme.com/2PVYEZB8. And to help winterize the large Ocheti Sakoan camp and keep water protectors on site this winter, you can go to crowdrise.com/winterize-water-protectors-camp. To support Women's Healing Wellness and Birthing Center at the camp, go to www.gofundme.com/2mxpggc. Please send medical supplies directly to Waste Win Young at 950 Meadowlark Street, Fort Yates, North Dakota, 58538. That's Waste, W-A-S-T-E, Win, W-I-N, Young, Y-O-U-N-G, at 950 Meadowlark Street, Fort Yates, North Dakota, 58538. Please send herbs and traditional medicines directly to Linda Black Elk, P.O. Box 924, Mobridge, South Dakota, 57601. Please keep it tuned to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. To support our work here at the station, visit kppfm.com and go to the donate button. Thank you for tuning in to this special report from Standing Rock. Mini Wiccioni, water is life. Ha ha ha!